podcast of what we have decided to call 1200 CCs of sports.
So any big events going on sports-wise, we will be delivering tons of facts along with our opinions on the various topics.
Speaking on what's going on at the moment, the MLB playoffs start next week with the first wildcard game kicking off on October 2nd.
So we're going to cover both the NL side and the AL side for baseball since the postseason is approaching so quickly. For my standouts, I have the Cubs and Dodgers as the most dangerous teams in the NL heading into the postseason. My reasoning for the Cubs, despite their recent struggles, they are scoring five or more runs on a consistent basis. I know that pitching staff hasn't been the sharpest, but there's so much experience in that rotation. Cole Hamels has a World Series championship under his belt. So does John Lester, and so does Kyle Hendricks with the actual Cubs 2 years ago. There's too much experience on their side, in my opinion. The only thing stopping the Cubs is the fact that they are right with the Brewers right now. The Brewers are only a half game behind them in the NL Central. If the Brewers catch the Cubs and surpass them, the Cubs are going to have to play a one-game wild card round, and if they lose that, their postseason's over. As for the other team, I have the Dodgers. Justin Turner has the best batting average in the MLB since the trade deadline. And Yasiel Puig has been batting .333 throughout the month of September, and he also has that rocket arm out of right field. For the AL side, I have the Red Sox, who have won the most games in the history of their team. They added their 106th tally to the win column on Tuesday. Outside of the Yankees and maybe the Astros with their impressive middle infield, I don't see anybody putting up a fight against the Red Sox on the AL side. The dominance of Mookie Betts, J.D. Martinez, and then Chris Sale on the pitching end, it's a deadly combination, and I don't see anybody putting up a fight on them, maybe until the World Series even.
All right, let's segue into some NFL news. Baker Mayfield led the Browns to their first win since December 24th, 2016. That was an amazing game to watch as the Jets were leading like 14-0 and a half, and then the Browns just sent in Baker Mayfield, and he just connected with this team right away and they just led them to that victory. It was amazing to watch.
And then just to put everything into perspective, the last time the Browns got a win in the NFL, Donald Trump had just become president and he had only been 1 month into it. Yeah, I think Mayfield really connected them with them well. The thing that's most interesting to me is Hugh Jackson was not going to put him in at all. Tyrod just happened to get a concussion and called upon Baker, and sure enough, he came through. So, now we're going to focus on the Bears. Probably the worst 2-1 team performance-wise so far, but they are leading the NFC North for the first time since 2013. And that is because Khalil Mack racked up two more sacks against the Cardinals, basically saving the entire game. I mean, the Bears found themselves down 14-3 to a team that didn't even have a touchdown on the season before that game. But, I mean, the defense shut out the Cardinals for those next two quarters, and Khalil Mack was a big, big part of that for sure.
Now we talk about the biggest injury of week three, and that was Jimmy Garoppolo tearing his ACL. And me as a 49ers fan, I see that our season's over. CJ Beathard is coming in to start week four against the LA Chargers.
I mean, he's not full of experience, but keep in mind, he did go to school in Iowa. He played against a bunch of good Big Ten defenses, so I think he's got some experience under his belt. But Jimmy Garoppolo had 4 or 5 years under his belt of being on a Patriots team that took home multiple championships. That's going to be a tough loss for sure.
This just happened, but Panthers signed safety Eric Reed, former 49er, to a one-year deal. Eric Reed is a veteran player. He will definitely add some versatility to the Panthers secondary. And it's also worth mentioning that Reed was one of the players that kneeled alongside Kaepernick during the national anthem. But just with some of the new rules that they placed this year, I don't think that that's going to be a problem. I think Reed's going to add some good colors to the Panthers secondary.
For sure. And if anything, with the whole kneeling thing, I think it was just him being a good teammate. And I mean, that's up for interpretation, but he was just supporting his teammate. Kaepernick seems to be the only one getting negative attention for that right now. Now we're going to go on to the fact that the Vikings lost to the Bills this week. And they didn't just lose. They lost 27-7. This is the biggest upset since December 3rd of 1995, when the 17.5-point underdog Washington Redskins beat the Dallas Cowboys. The Vikings were not supposed to lose this game. Kirk Cousins was supposed to dominate, and he ended up giving up three turnovers. And there was also a span where he lost a fumble on two consecutive drives. Josh Allen dominated with, I believe, 2 rushing touchdowns. He only had 1 pick. My question here is, are the Bills better than we thought, or did the Vikings just have a bad game?
I mean, I don't know. The Bills came off of last season. I mean, they made it to the playoffs, so they definitely have some talent on their team. I don't think that they're trash. I just think they had a rough 2 weeks kind of just getting things started, and I think Josh Allen has a lot of potential that he could be something that the Bills haven't had in a while, and that's a good starting quarterback.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think a lot of people were discrediting the Bills after that 0-2 start. I mean, Nathan Peterman was in there, and the guy he's not ready for the NFL. I don't think he has been for the past year when they threw him in last year and he had like a 5-interception game. He just needs to develop. You throw Josh Allen in there, and it's a world of a difference. The offense had command. The offense had tempo. They were pushing the Vikings of all teams around. And as for the Vikings, I also think they just had a bad game as well. I think that some things weren't connecting. I mean, Kirk Cousins has been a producer for the past 3 or 4 years since he took over for RG3. That was very uncharacteristic of him. And then you have that defense with Trey Waynes, Xavier Rhodes, the whole defensive line. I think it was a little bit of both for sure. Now we're going to move on to the Clay Matthews controversial hit on the quarterback. This hasn't just been Clay Matthews. It's appeared in multiple games, and if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, watching the Steelers-Tampa game the other night, there was a good 5 or 6 calls on roughing the passer that honestly just seemed absolutely ridiculous. Like, the exact rule is that it prohibits defenders from landing on the quarterback with their full body weight or driving them into the ground with excessive force. To me, that sounds like tackling.
That's the game of football. Tackling, exactly. And I don't think the quarterback should be an exception.
No.
He's a main player, and your objective as a defense should be to knock him down, to get in his head. It's not just sacking him. It's knocking him around a little bit, taking a mental toll. That's all strategy. The NFL is stripping that of the defenses right now, I think.
Yeah, I think there's just been a ton of bogus calls that are going on, and I think that the NFL just either needs to be consistent with it and needs to call everything, because there's been a few times where they've let it go. So I think they need to either just be really consistent with it, or they just need to reword the ruling where, you know, it's either hitting the quarterback late. I think that's roughing the passer. Or if you're just being way excessive, where like you're Ndamukong Suing the guy. And, like,
yeah, you're stepping on him and stuff.
That's roughing the passer. I don't think grabbing him and tackling him as hard as you can is bad. That's the name of football. Yeah.
And that's where this rule is so vague. If you're I don't like how that rule is worded. Driving them into the ground with excessive force. Every single ref in the entire NFL has their own interpretation of what excessive force is. So I just think it needs to be more concrete.
Yeah, I agree.
So now we're going to move on to bold predictions. We both came up to a conclusion about a guy I think we're both agreeing on. He's going to go off this week. Matt Ryan is going to drop 5 touchdowns on the Bengals defense this week. So something about Matt Ryan that a lot of people may not know, he has the third best third down conversion rate on throws since the year of 2001 at 45.6%. So almost half the time, Matt Ryan's, when he throws the ball, they're getting a first down. Bengals, on the other hand, who he happens to be playing this week, their defense is allowing a 52% conversion rate on third downs through these first 3 games. This is the worst in the NFL right now, and it's the worst that they've ever had in the Marvin Lewis era when he's been coaching for them. This is going to be deadly for the Bengals. Matt Ryan and Julio Jones have had a chemistry for years that has just depleted the secondaries. And with the hot start of Calvin Ridley, I don't think the possibilities are... I don't think they have a ceiling. I think they're going to go off on him. And then also, third downs are where a defense can prove themselves and where momentum shifts can occur. And if an offense can't be made uncomfortable on third downs, they're going to step all over this defense. So 5 touchdowns for Matt Ryan this week, and the Falcons are going to even the record out at 2-2. Now we're going to go with use him or lose him. For my use him, I have Carlos Hyde. I think he's very underrated, probably because he is on the Browns right now, despite them getting their first win, unfortunately. But he scored at least 1 touchdown in all of their games, and he's gotten 61 touches in 3 games. As impressive as that Baker Mayfield performance was, I think it's going to be a couple weeks before Hugh Jackson gives him the keys to the offense. He's got some chemistry to develop. He doesn't have any people to throw to besides Jarvis Landry. I think it's going to be ground and pound for that Browns offense.
All right, for my use him, I'm going to do the Atlanta wide receiver, Calvin Ridley. Dude had 11 catches for 210 yards and 4 touchdowns only in 2 games. And I think that if Matt Ryan is not throwing to Julio Jones, which guaranteed he's not going to throw to Julio every single play, he's going to be going to Ridley. I think Ridley's going to have a huge day against the Bengals, like what you were saying with how they're just terrible on third downs and how the Falcons are leading in third downs. I think it's going to be huge for Ridley, and I think he's going to get another 100-yard game. 100-yard game, 2 touchdowns, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it at all. That Bengals defense is looking vulnerable, and every other team going up against that passing game is going to be, in my opinion. Now for losing, we have Case Keenum. So far this season, I haven't seen the Case Keenum that I saw on the Minnesota Vikings last year. He's thrown for only 3 touchdowns against a whopping 5 interceptions throughout the first 3 games. He hasn't even thrown a touchdown pass since that first week. Additionally, Keenum hasn't been racking up anything in the yards category since week 1. Last week, he posted the least amount of yards he's had all season with only 192. If you're not throwing touchdowns and you're not throwing for a lot of yards, you have no reason to start Keenum on your team in fantasy, in my opinion. They don't have a wide receiving core anymore. I mean, Demaryius Thomas has like 150 yards on the season so far. He's older. And, I mean, Emmanuel Sanders looks like their only glimmer of hope. So I don't think there's much to hold on to there.
Yeah. For my lose-em, maybe a little bit premature to be assuming this, but I think Josh Gordon, he's suffering a bit of a hamstring injury, and it's not likely that he's going to play this weekend. And I thought as soon as that he got signed with the Patriots, he was going to come on the next week and just go off. I was expecting to get, 100, 120 yards with Brady connecting with him, but he's been injured. And don't forget, Julian Edelman is coming back next week, and that is Brady's number one wide receiver. And I just think Gordon is a waste of space on your fantasy team as of right now. We'll see a couple weeks down the road if Gordon can get healthy and if he'll come and be a strong wide receiver. But as of right now, I think bench him, release him, whatever.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And then not to mention, who's the tight end? The best tight end in the league, Rob Gronkowski.
Exactly.
And then you still got Chris Hogan, who he's somewhat throwing to. I mean, Tom Brady hasn't even been producing that well either. So if he's not producing well, who says he's going to prioritize? Oh, it's going to be Josh Gordon's game this week. I think he's in for a load of trouble fantasy-wise.
Yeah.
All right, that's all we're going to have for today on 1200 CCs of Sports. Thank you guys for joining us so much. And we will talk to you guys next week.